and welcome to another very special episode of Let Me Explain You a Thing. My name is Andrew, and this is the podcast where I talk extemporaneously on a subject I know a decent amount about, usually on my drive to work, which is not the case today because I'm actually in the home studio, so apologies for cat noise, although I can't guarantee she'll make an appearance. Usually when she hears me talking on mic, she clams up real good. So, we'll see. But today, I wanted to... Okay, so I've tried this podcast a few times. Actually, on my drive to work. I've tried recording this. And it's been kind of difficult. I think I keep sidetracking myself a little bit. But just to get right into it, I wanted to talk about two... kind of observe and in my own way honor the passing of a great, Akira Toriyama, the manga artist who created the Dragon Ball series, passed away in early March, and I've been feeling some kind of way about it. Dragon Ball Z have been very impactful on my life, on my imagination, in kind of an embarrassing way, and I just wanted to talk about it because, again, this is something that I know a decent amount about, and let's give it its due. I don't believe I've talked about Dragon Ball Z in the past, which is crazy because I know so much about it. It's not a brag. Anyway, so let's start with a little production history. So Dragon Ball, it's a manga series that ran from the early 80s through the mid 90s. The Dragon Ball series itself was kind of, it was divided in two and, produced as anime, as both Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. The original run of the Dragon Ball anime was from the early mid 80s, 83, I want to say, to 89, rough estimates. And then of course the, broadcast in English dubbed, in the US was later, but that was the original run in Japan. Dragon Ball Z then runs from, I want to say, picks up right where Dragon Ball ended in 89. Of course, the source material was already in existence at this point. So they had everything they needed to just, carry on the momentum of the original series. And I guess they decided, I don't fully understand the production history, the decision making in broadcasting it in two different series, but I think tonally there are some strong differences, so it makes sense. I don't know if at this point in the broadcast history of Dragon Ball, they decided to, Akira Toriyama decided to do something a little different with the series moving forward. There is kind of, we'll talk about it. There's some kind of clean breaks though that I think you can divide the series into. Anyway, so Dragon Ball Z broadcast in Japan from 1989 through 96 or 7, something like that, and then broadcast in the US between the late 90s and 2003 on Toonami. And that was, of course, my introduction to it. I'll say Dragon Ball Z wasn't the first anime I watched, but it made the strongest impression. I think I was also a big fan of Sailor Moon, in first grade or something, but I think Dragon Ball Z definitely spoke more to me as a boy. You know, Sailor Moon is incredible. I love it. Dragon Ball Z, you know, it's just designed to kind of suit a certain male power fantasy. and, you know, I say that with love, but also criticism. Dragon Ball is shonen, and that is a genre for adolescent boys. Thump. Apologies for neighbor noise. Shonen is a genre for adolescent boys, and it caters to their interests, their needs, their perspectives. And a lot of other really popular anime in the 90s. I think you can pretty firmly plant Dragon Ball Z in the 90s by the style of it. And it always felt kind of to me like it looked a little bit older than it actually was. Like, I think I was under the impression, I didn't understand TV broadcast schedules as a kid. I was under the impression Dragon Ball Z was being broadcast live. There was actually a point in 2003 when at some point in the Majin Buu arc, I was real psyched up to see what would happen next. You know, the new episode had just come out. So I thought, so I tune in and it restarted back at the beginning of the Buu saga. I was like, damn it. I was happy to rewatch it, but I wanted to find out what happened. Anyway, so, you know, I think I had some awareness, certainly, that it felt a little older. Not quite as old as other anime I had seen, like Speed Racer or, like, you know, original Gundam or, you know, like, what's the, not Superboy. I'm getting, like, two Cyborg anime from, like, the 70s mixed up. Cyborg 009. And then there was also Astro Boy? Rocket Boy? Something like that. I didn't, you know, clearly I wasn't really as into those. And there was, like, kind of a graininess to the animation. Very hand-drawn quality to the animation of Dragon Ball Z that I think I associated with earlier anime, and certainly not the contemporary cartoons that were being produced on, like, Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, at, you know, in, like, 1999 to 2003. But, yeah, it wasn't until much later that I realized, oh, yeah, they were actually broadcasting these shows, like, we got them, like, 5 or 10 years later. Not something you're always used to experiencing in the U.S. The U.S. is, you know, such a, like, factory of, you know, world culture. We export a lot more than we import, and I think anime was kind of maybe the beginning of the U.S. really starting to import, and, like, the fact that, you know, U.S. cartoons were so heavily influenced by anime. Like, in the mid-2000s, you start to see, like, Avatar the Last Airbender. That would not have been possible. I remember kids in middle school wearing, like, anime freak t-shirts. Bold move, middle school kids. But you would not have really, like, like, at some point, they were just Japanese cartoons to me. And then past that point, they were anime. It was anime. But, you know, looking back, knowing what I know now, and I am not, you know, by any stretch a huge anime viewer. I think probably in the top 50 percentile of all Americans, which is not saying a lot. Definitely not as big a viewer as some out there, but, like, you look at Dragon Ball Z in, like, the Frieza saga, there's, you know, probably, like, drawn and produced in like 93, 4, something like that. There's this quality to it that seems very reminiscent to me of, you know, like other 90s anime, Ghost in the Shell, Evangelion, Trigun, some of the contemporary Studio Ghibli. Oh, there she is. Hey, you gonna say hi? Oh, big yawn. Yeah, so there's this 90s anime quality to it that I couldn't really recognize till later. Moving on. So Dragon Ball Z. I'll start with Dragon Ball. I don't know as much about Dragon Ball. I did not watch as much about it, like there were documentaries made about it or something. I did not watch as much Dragon Ball. But tonally, it's kind of silly. It's a little slapstick. It's a little raunchy at times. A little risque for, you know, a show being broadcast to, like, tweens on Cartoon Network at 4 p.m. or whatever. But who's the principal cast? It's Son Goku, who is a young, like, 12-ish, boy of 12-ish, who teams up with this young woman, this, like, teen girl with turquoise hair, Bulma. Bulma has this radar device that can locate the Dragon Balls. There are 7 Dragon Balls in the world, and legend says that if you assemble all 7, you get to summon a dragon that can grant you a wish. So naturally, you know, many characters in our unfolding drama are drawn to this power, drawn to the idea of summoning a wish-granting dragon. And our first antagonists in the show, Emperor Pilaf and his gang. Emperor Pilaf, he's like this little demon imp blue guy. He wants to, you know, summon the dragon so he can achieve world domination. That kind of megalomaniac, like, bad guy. But he's comical. His 2 henchmen are Mai and I don't remember the little fox guy's name. They're kind of bumbling. It's comical. Goku and Bulma, they pick up a crew that includes Yamcha, a desert bandit, and his companion, this shape-shifting cat thing named Puar. Puar does not shapeshift, like, take somebody's identity for, like, assassinations or anything like that. Puar is this, like, little blue cat-like being that can transform into, like, a giant frying pan to, like, thonk, you know, a bad guy. There's also Oolong, who's this, like, pig demon guy. Oolong actually comes in clutch when the crew, forget exactly how it comes to pass, but like the dragon gets summoned and Emperor Pilaf is about to make some kind of wish for world domination, and Oolong jumps in and wishes for a pair of this is serious. Oolong jumps in and wishes for a pair of panties, thus wasting the wish and preventing Emperor Pilaf from achieving said world domination. They, using Bulma's dragon radar, they kind of, you know, go from place to place, encountering different interesting characters and, like, kind of local bad guys who might be holding on to a Dragon Ball because, you know, out of, like, keeping it from you know, are good guys for malice, or they might be keeping it because it's viewed as a beautiful, like, heirloom or something like that, or some treasured artifact of some kind. The Dragon Balls, they're like basketball size, like glassy, although sometimes smaller. I don't know. It's kind of, they're depicted in different sizes somewhat. But they're these like glassy orange balls with each a different number of red stars on them, 1 through 7, because there's 7. They don't really need to be numbered. It's not like important. They don't have, you know, like the 3-star ball doesn't have its own like character or whatever. They don't need to gather them in any particular order. It doesn't really matter. It's just like a cool design thing, I think. Let's see. So as the series progresses, and we meet Krillin, a young monk who joins Goku to train under this kind of horny, cantankerous old guy named Master Roshi, who lives on an island with a turtle. And another shapeshifter, a woman named Launch, who is kind of like, I don't know the specific trope she plays into, but she's like kind of, you know, ditzy, very sweet personality, and she keeps house for Master Roshi, but whenever she sneezes, her hair turns from black to blonde, and her sweet personality is replaced with like this really coarse, violent one. And she shoots guns and rides motorcycles and stuff. And like, whenever that happens, the gag of the episode is like, oh, we got to get Launch to sneeze again, change her back. But Master Roshi, there's like this arc where Master Roshi trains Goku and Krillin, in martial arts, teaches Goku the Kamehameha wave, which would later become Goku's like signature, you know, beam attack. The Kamehameha wave, and they fight in a martial arts tournament. They encounter like Tien and Chiaotzu, a couple other like tertiary characters. The scale of the conflict eventually ramps up. They fight the Red Ribbon Army, becomes like, instead of just like one kind of like lone bad guy, now it's like a whole militarized like operation. And it gets a little bit more serious, but the tone is still kind of light and jokey, and the character designs are so like cute. And, you know, like Goku, he flies around on this little yellow cloud called Nimbus that can only be ridden by those pure of heart. He has this staff that can extend to any length. Oh, and he has this tail, which is, you know, interesting. Whenever he sees a full moon, he turns into a raging great ape. Normally, he's like this kind of silly, you know, irreverent little kid. But he becomes this uncontrollable monster when he sees a full moon. Seems like something that can be avoided most of the time, but you'd be surprised. There's actually one time I remember when they kind of put that, the characters put that to their advantage. They're trapped under this like giant lens, like in this huge pit. By Emperor Pilaf, and Pilaf is like, haha, I have you trapped, and when the sun comes up, it's gonna cook you like an egg. And of course it's a full moon that night. Goku sees it, smashes out of the pit, the, you know, big glass lens thing. So that's fun. What else? So, the series ends with Goku, in his late teens, they fight this like frog-like demon guy called the Evil King Piccolo. He spawns a Piccolo Jr. Who grows up to be the Piccolo we know, kind of his like asexually reproduced like clone son, who gets redeemed as a good guy. Evil King Piccolo is defeated, however, and Goku goes on to marry Chi-Chi, who's kind of like his like high school sweetheart. Not that anybody goes to school in this show. And the series ends with them probably like on the you know, like just barely adults. They get married, they have a kid right away. Okay, so that's Dragon Ball. Yeah, Dragon Ball is really, really funny and charming and worth a rewatch. It's very heavily inspired by the Chinese folklore of the Journey to the West. I know almost nothing about the Journey to the West other than the fact that it inspired in some way Dragon Ball. Sadly, I'm not equipped to explain on that. But that's just good to know, that there was kind of a folkloric antecedent for Dragon Ball. Then, moving on to Dragon Ball Z, we have a pretty significant shift in tone. The series becomes a lot more serious. There's still levity, there's still goofiness, there's still some, like, characters that get a little raunchy. But it gets more serious. It's also less magical. It's less about, like, the demons and the, you know, magical creatures and shape changers and stuff like that, and less of the like mythological folkloric basis of the series. And it's kind of more of like a sci-fi sort of show. We're traveling from one planet to the next, blowing up planets in some cases. We see whole alien races. Piccolo and Goku are not, you know, just magical creatures of some kind. They're actually just aliens. I don't want to go blow by blow with the storyline of Dragon Ball Z. It's really iconic. The story is kind of organized into what fans refer to as sagas. Excuse me while I take a quick drink. The story is organized into arcs fans call sagas. And from start to finish, there might be some like micro sagas in there that I'm leaving out, but you got the Saiyan saga where you know the Saiyans are introduced as a thing, and we have to prepare for them. First there's Raditz, who's Goku's brother, and then Vegeta and Nappa arrive. Raditz and Nappa are dispatched with, Vegeta remains, and he's kind of, like enemy of my enemy is my friend, kind of, you know, side piece to the action for a little while. And then he becomes kind of an anti-hero, and then more of a good guy, and then kind of relapses, and then he's back on firmly on the side of good. And he's the whole time, Vegeta's relationship with Goku is like prime in the show. Vegeta, like Goku, makes the major stride of becoming a Super Saiyan before Vegeta does, which is endlessly humiliating to Vegeta. He's got a huge chip on his shoulder about it. He's also shorter than Goku. And originally, Vegeta was depicted as being this kind of tiny guy with, like, the troll haircut, to contrast with his companion Nappa, who is, like, this hulking, like, giant bald guy with a handlebar mustache. Also, most of the Dragon Ball characters are named after vegetables or plants or food. Oolong is an obvious one. I don't know if Goku is. His Saiyan name that he's informed of is Kakarot, obviously Carrot. Vegeta. There's a bad guy in one of the side movies called Garlic Jr. Like, Garlic Jr. Nappa Cabbage. A lot of characters are named for vegetables and food and stuff. It's funny. it's kind of too silly. I don't know, whatever. I generally, for as seriously as Dragon Ball Z takes itself, I am okay when they kind of, like, break character a little bit. It's fine. Okay, so... yeah, Vegeta was really diminutive originally. He got to be, like, a bulky guy with a troll haircut. Eventually. So that's kind of a shift in character that we see later. Or in character design, I suppose, rather. Because originally it's like, oh, he's like the shrimpy guy, Nappa's the muscle. And then they defeat Nappa with much difficulty, and it turns out, oh wait, no, Vegeta's actually way stronger than Nappa. Because another thing about this universe, and this is not really established in Dragon Ball except for the Kamehameha wave, but like, people can control the ki or the chi of their own bodies, their spirits, and produce like beams of energy or blasts of energy. They can fly, and I'm not talking like shooting energy like in a, you know, Superman, you know, laser vision kind of way, or like, although somebody does have that power, Nappa maybe. It happens at least once. But I'm not really talking about that. I'm not really talking about, like, second law of thermodynamics, like, you know, like you might expect in some more serious fantasy, like, you know, the fifth season or something. Like, that's, there's a heavy cost to using that kind of power. No, actually, it's kind of like a spirit energy. So, like, the more, you know, good, strong-hearted somebody is, the more, like, determined, the angrier, the more powerful they can kind of get is kind of like an underlying, like, rule of the universe. We still got the dragon and the dragon radar, and over the course of the series, it becomes, like, trivially easy because these characters can fly. At some point midway through, Goku learns the ability to teleport just anywhere in the galaxy. So it becomes trivially easy to... they become so much stronger, too. It becomes just a cakewalk to gather the Dragon Balls and make a wish with the dragon. After you make a wish, the Dragon Balls scatter. I didn't mention that earlier. They scatter to the wind, so you gotta find them again. But, so, I didn't mention, after Dragon Ball Z, you've got some successor shows. There's Dragon Ball GT, which ran in the late 90s in Japan and was broadcast in, like, the mid-2000s in the U.S. Not for very long. I don't think it did very well, and they kind of, like, pulled the plug on it. It was not, I believe, Dragon Ball GT was not based on the anime. It was kind of spun off from... based on the manga. It was kind of spun off from, like, some like, world building that was kind of laid down by some of the last episodes of Dragon Ball Z. There's this very short, like, 3 to 5 episode story arc at the end of Dragon Ball Z called, like, the World Peace Arc or something like that. The Peaceful World Saga, and it just kind of shows, like, after all the major enemies have been dealt with, what the characters are up to, what their lives are like. A couple characters have gotten together, had kids, that kind of thing. It's like a short time skip ahead. Or maybe like 10 years, I don't know. Anyway, so Dragon Ball GT, which I think stands for Grand Tour, something like that, kind of picked up the threads, took them elsewhere. GT did some weird, weird things. Goku, at this point, is a grandfather. His son, Gohan, has a daughter named Pan. Also food-related, Pan. I think Gohan is some kind of food item in Eastern Asia as well. I just don't know. Anyway, so Pan accompanies, like, Gohan at this point. So they, for a lot of Dragon Ball Z, it was kind of like they realized that they needed, like, Goku was an adult, and they, for a lot of the early part, it tracks Gohan from, like, age. I want to say at the start of Dragon Ball Z, he's 3. He ages up to, like, 5 or 7 in short order. And then, you know, he really comes into his own. He defeats the second mega arc villain, that kind of act 2 villain of the series, Cell. Sort of like a genetic, like, amalgam of DNA from the Z, different Z fighters. He defeats Cell. He's the one responsible for doing that, where others failed, including Goku. And it kind of looked like Gohan was being built up to be, like, sort of take over, you know, in his father's footsteps as the new, like, main character, the new, like, boy, like, preteen, teen boy character viewpoint, Trojan horse sort of character from Goku. But I think Goku was just too popular at this point, so they kind of sidelined Gohan. He is way cooler at age 14 than age, like, 18, and that's a bummer. After the Cell arc, there's a time skip. Goku's dead, so he's, like, in the afterlife. This is another thing. Characters die a lot. They get wished back. It's, you know, fine. Sometimes they have to hang out in the afterlife, the underworld, for a little bit. Because I think there was a rule at some point to kind of, like, add rules to the wishing thing, because it got too easy. There was a rule at some point that you could only wish someone back a certain number of times, and Goku had exceeded that number. And, oh, there's one, so at the end of the Frieza arc, which is kind of what the original, like, the Saiyan arc kind of leads into, they go to Namek, they fight Frieza. Frieza's kind of like this intergalactic, like, you know, real estate mogul, basically. Like, he will send his warriors, which include a number of the dispossessed Saiyans. Frieza was responsible for destroying their planet, and now he employs the remaining Saiyans, including Raditz and Vegeta and Nappa. And they're trying to get Goku at the start of Dragon Ball Z. That's what that whole conflict is about. So Frieza basically, like, genocides planets and, like, sells them to the highest bidder. And I read somewhere recently, or I don't know, saw someplace that this was Akira Toriyama, like, making a comment on, like, you know, big landlords and slumlords, housing, real estate, you know, speculators, which is, you know, pretty incredible if that's the case. I mean, it's right there. It's text, basically. So, yeah, what a hero. Anyway, so they go to planet Namek, which is where Piccolo is from. You meet some other Namekians. Frieza's there. They end up fighting Frieza. Frieza, you know, to beat Goku, like, overloads the planet's core with energy, so it's, like, melting down. It's going to explode. There's a point where they gather the... Back on Earth, they gather the Dragon Balls and wish Goku back to life, and the dragon is like, Goku's not dead. And they're like, whoa. And it turns out he survived. He fought Frieza and lived and made it back to his ship, which is pretty sick. Oh, yeah, so they go to I think what happens is Kami, who is, like, kind of the god of Earth, I think, and also a Namekian, I think, he is, like, he dies, I think. This happens maybe a couple times. So Kami dies, and that means that the Dragon Balls become inert. The balls are inert? Does that mean they don't work? Man, go watch some, like, YouTube poops from 2009 on it. Good shit. Never gets old. Anyway, so, yeah, the Kami dies, so the Dragon Balls, like, turn to stone. You can't wish on them anymore. So I think that's why they end up going to Namek, because they get wind that, oh, the Namekians also have Dragon Balls and a dragon, and this dragon grants you 3 wishes. So, anyway. That dragon's name is Purunga. The Earth dragon's name is Shenron. Anyway, so where was I going with this? Yeah, okay, so Arc 1, it's all about the Saiyans, introducing them and their relationship to Frieza. Frieza is the big bad. They defeat him. Next arc, kind of the second arc of the series. Also, Frieza, that's like 100 episodes, that first arc I just mentioned. That's like start to finish 100 episodes. A lot of stuff kind of happens in there. There's a lot of, like, mini-bosses that they fight, whatever. But the next one is kind of more about, like, you know, DNA, man and machine, genetics, stuff like that, because the big bad is Cell, who is created with the DNA from various Z fighters. I mentioned that. Before Cell, they also fight a number of androids, which are humans transformed into, you know, part machine, part human, you know, creatures, very powerful. There's also kind of a time travel. It gets very sci-fi. There's kind of a time travel element where Cell, like, travels back in time, kind of, to get to this point. But also, there's this character named Trunks who's introduced, who's, like, a badass. He has a sword. Nobody else has a sword to this point in this series. And Frieza actually comes back. He's been, like, you know, his body recovered from space, and he's been patched together. Kind of the first android that you see, actually. Trunks shows up and, like, dispatches him like nothing. Like, cutting through hot butter with a cold knife or something, however the saying goes. Anyway, and Trunks reveals himself to Goku and Goku alone that he is actually the son of Vegeta and Bulma. What? They're not even in a relationship yet at this point. I think they find out at some point, and they're like, oh, that's a weird way to find out that I sleep with you. But yeah, so that happens. And yeah, Trunks is their future child. You see him, like, after a time skip later as a child. But this is adult Trunks. Trunks also, there's this weird arc where, like, he comes from a future, like, he came back to the past to, like, clue everyone in on what's going on and, like, help them defeat the androids and Cell, because in his future, Goku dies of heart disease. He dies of heart disease, and the Z fighters are fucked, so they you know, cave to Sal and the androids, and Trunks comes from this like future dystopia where it's ruled by Sal, whatever. And so Bulma sends him back in time to fix stuff. And that's what he does, or helps to do. Gohan, I had mentioned Gohan's kind of a rising star at this point. He saves the day. Goku can't even make it, but Gohan goes Super Saiyan 2, which is a level hitherto unknown to the viewer. Gohan goes Super Saiyan 2, defeats Cell. There's a time skip. We meet Goku's, who was Goku's, like, infant son, now, like, a young child, hanging out with young child Trunks. Goku's younger son is named Goten. Looks like Goku, but small. Like, baby Goku again. And then Gohan kind of takes a turn. He becomes, like, a nerdy teenager. Like, he's really bookish and scholarly, and he makes a play to using his, like, incredible powers to be, like your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He calls himself the Great Saiyaman, and he has, like, a cape and a helmet to hide his identity. It's very silly. I'm sure this is a comment on superhero media or something. Or Western comics, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so that's Goku. The next arc kind of redeems the very sci-fi-ness of, like, first, the Frieza arc being on a different planet for most of it, and being very much about aliens. And then the second one being about, like androids and, you know, genetic amalgams and time travel. And the last arc of the series, the Boo arc, is about this, like, big pink demon thing that can turn people into candy and absorb them and absorb their powers. A big theme of Dragon Ball Z is transformation. It's characters, good and bad, you know, changing shape, changing form. You haven't even seen my final form, and all that. And, like, Goku turning into a great ape. At some point, he loses his tail, so he can't do that any longer. I guess there was a sword earlier on in Dragon Ball Z. A guy, like, this baseball team manager who, like, here's another thing. Okay. Alright, so a lot of the characters that we've introduced thus far, especially the human characters, at some point they get way outclassed. They are no longer at a level of competition with the bad guys. Early on against the Saiyans, like, maybe Krillin, Yamcha, you know, could lend a hand. Against Majin Buu, they're just like, they might as well be regular Joe Schmoes. Like, they're literally Earth's strongest warriors. They're the strongest, like, peak human physical condition. But they are not defeating Majin Buu. It's just not in the same universe of possibility. So there's kind of this dynamic where those characters are still, they still exist. They don't, like, the show doesn't, like, you know, bid them adieu at any point. They're still there. They're hanging out. And this is the thing that I think Dragon Ball Z has very much in common with the Fast and Furious franchise. The cast list is ever expanding. And at the end of every movie, every Fast and Furious movie, the Dom's family, you know, gathers together. They have a cookout. They smash a bunch of Coronas. They hang out. They're just chilling. Like, however bad things get, whoever died in the course of the movie, or, you know, however imperiled they got, they can always just, like, get together at the end and, like, blow off steam, hang out, you know, grill some meats and stuff. And that literally happens in Dragon Ball Z. Like, so often the characters just hang out, they fight, they spar a little bit. But they're just, they like chill at Bulma's house, or like go have a picnic someplace beautiful. Just hang out. They're living life, smashing a bunch of food. It's great. I mean, honestly, like, Dragon Ball Z is kind of known for having filler episodes, and there's actually a later series that came out in, I want to say 2009 or 10, called Dragon Ball Z Kai. Oh yeah, 2009. So Z Kai was like the 20-year anniversary re-release of Dragon Ball Z. It was very condensed. It was remastered, edited, so that a lot of the, you know, like, kind of meme sequences of, like, characters charging or, like, like, nothing really happens in an episode because the first half was recapping from the last episode and the second half gets recapped, you know, by the next episode or whatever. Like, the second half recaps from what happened before the commercial. So, like, nothing really progresses is kind of the joke. This is... I mentioned the Freeza arc is like 100 episodes. 100 episodes is about the length of each of those mega arcs. Like, we're talking, this is a over 300 episode series of an anime. And a lot happens from the start to the finish, but also, like, from one episode to the next, not a lot happens. That's an important thing to note. So Dragon Ball Z Kai was introduced to kind of address that and thin it down. I don't know. I think it was received relatively well. But, you know, it wasn't adding anything new, certainly. In the teens, we got Dragon Ball Z Super. Or Dragon Ball Super, which does kind of go in some different directions. I think I was meaning to talk a little bit more about GT. GT, so Goku gets reverted to his child form, I think, to, like, kind of bring his power level more, you know, down to Earth. It's weird. I mean, he's, like, a child hanging out with his granddaughter who is, like, the same age as, you know, he is in form. It's weird. But they introduced some different transformations, like Super Saiyan 4. Dragon Ball Super does something kind of similar. There's like, and so Dragon Ball Z in the Buu saga, you get Super Saiyan 3, which is the really long hair, like heavy brow, well, you know, potato muscled, version of Super Saiyan. It's a level beyond Super Saiyan 2, even. Super Saiyan 2 doesn't really look that different, though. But then you start, in Dragon Ball Super, getting all these other forms that are, like, Ultra Instinct. Or, like, you know, like, Ascended Legendary Super Saiyan or whatever. I think in Dragon Ball GT, they had, like, Golden Ape, which is, like, you turn into the monkey form and then go Super Saiyan as a monkey? Wild. Anyway, so they kind of just, like, keep raising the bar. My favorite... So, another thing. There's a lot of Dragon Ball Z movies out there. Most of the time, they're, like, kind of non-canonical, like, side bars to whatever is going on. Like, you can kind of... if you want, like, look at Tree of Might or something and figure out where that fits in the chronology based on, like, how old Gohan is and, like, are they going Super Saiyan or not, or Super Saiyan 3 or not. You know, what are the characters' relationships like, that kind of thing. Dragon Ball Super has had some... I didn't really like superheroes that much. That was kind of, like... So basically, rather than GT and try to take the franchise in some kind of new direction, but also kind of play the hits by having Kid Goku back on the scene, they were really trying to, like, push it in a new direction. Like, there were evil Dragon Balls and, like, evil dragons that represented each of the balls. I don't know. I never watched it. But Dragon Ball Super has been, like, just kind of... you know, at this point, not just playing the hits in like a cynical way, but like, it's like a band that's, you know, been together for like 40 years. All the rockers are like in their 70s or something. And they're just like, yeah, man, we know what we are. Like, we know why people come to see us. Or like, it's like seeing Green Day and they're like 50 or Weezer or something. It's not like, it doesn't have the same edge as seeing those groups in like 1995. Everybody knows it. They get it. That's not why they're there. It's their... they're there because they're fans and they love it. And like, you know, everyone's like self-aware of what's going on at those shows. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's, you know, anyway, like Dragon Ball Super is that. It's like they're saying, okay, we're going to introduce a couple new characters, a little bit of new stuff, some new forms, but we're mostly like thematically going to keep everything people liked about Dragon Ball Z and not really change it. So that's how you get like, in Dragon Ball Super, Dragon Ball Super Broly. That's hands down my favorite Dragon Ball movie in existence. They fully know, you know, for one thing, it starts with the Saiyan saga, of the, I guess not the saga in Dragon Ball Z, but like the story of the Saiyans, their planet being destroyed by Frieza. There's some real, like, you know, kind of emotion to that story, and you never really get to see it on screen. You're just told about it, you know, ex post facto, by other characters who are not even really there, in Dragon Ball Z. But Dragon Ball Super, you see that. Super Broly, you see that play out. And then the whole second part of the movie, they're fighting Broly. Bulma's trying to gather the Dragon Balls so that she can, like, you know, like, wish some of her wrinkles away or something, or, like, wish herself to look, like, 5 years younger. Frieza's looking for the Dragon Balls so he can wish himself, like, an inch taller. Like, they know what they're doing. They're being goofy with it. And Broly is the bad guy, and they keep just raising the stakes, raising. Like, the whole arc of raising the stakes in Dragon Ball Z plays out in this, like, 2-hour anime movie. It's incredible. If you watch any... honestly, if you're gonna spend 2 hours watching any Dragon Ball content at all, make it that movie. Dragon Ball Super Broly. It's incredible. And you get the whole gist of everything Dragon Ball Z is about. It came out in like 2017 or 18. You know, it's all there. It's all on the paper for you. Anyway, should start to think about closing thoughts because I'm running a little long. There's so much to say about this series. It's so goofy. I haven't even really touched on Majin Buu. Definitely the coolest villain of the Dragon Ball Z series. Transformation, redemption. Goku is unfailingly a good guy, and, you know, he can be silly in his normal form. He gets serious when he goes Super Saiyan, but he's always offering a hand to the villains, like, to a fault. Like, he, you know, when he could just, like, you know, Frieza is at his lowest, he could stomp him and just destroy the threat of Frieza, who is, to be fair, a genocidal, you know, maniac. He offers a hand and he's like, look, you can, it's not too late to, I don't know if that's true, but, you know, he says, it's not too late to, like, turn a corner, to, you know, try to redeem yourself, to, you know, work for, you know, the forgiveness and the undoing of, you know, your crimes. Frieza declines. But still Goku offers, you know, and that's kind of what he's all about. Vegeta, again, could have been a bad guy exclusively. He becomes Goku's staunchest ally. Same with Piccolo, although that happens earlier in the show. So transformation, redemption, major themes of Dragon Ball Z. It's a show with a lot of heart, and I think that really reflects Toriyama's, you know, worldview. I think just the world of Dragon Ball Z also, there's like these big uninhabited wildernesses of, you know, vast deserts, you know, beautiful like rivers and mountains and forests inhabited by dinosaurs, you know. Goku lives this very pastoral life, like, you know, off in the woods with his family in this like cabin. You know, but there is a bustling city where Bulma lives, and you know, it's all really like nice and pleasant, and it makes those the fights really feel like there's stakes, in as much as there can be. Like it doesn't always feel like there's stakes in the show, but it kind of gives a decent sense of stakes. And you know, it's just really, it's really nice. It you know, it's always so lovely after the intensity of one of these conflicts to like have the characters come back home, you know, back on the ranch, and they, you know, just like hang out under some parasols and sip lemonade and like, you know, joke and laugh with each other. In a very anime way where they're just laughing and there's no actual jokes being said. It's just like characters, like their eyes closed, like, ha 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 ha. But it's still nice. It's pleasant. And I think that also, you know, kind of reflects the heart and soul of its creator. I haven't even touched on any of Toriyama's other works. Dragon Quest, the character designs for Chrono Trigger, a great game in its own right. But, you know, of course, Dragon Ball and everything that Dragon Ball spawned is, you know, most closely, you know, his own work, his own creation. So it felt fitting to focus on that. But anyway, I guess I'm home. I didn't have to drive to get here, but I am home. So that'll be it for my podcast today. As always, thank you to Scott Suter for the wonderful intro and outro themes. Find him on SoundCloud at Scott Suter and on Instagram and TikTok at Copenhagen Cool Ranch. There we go. Find my website online, letmeexplainyouathing.com. Suggest topics to me there. Well, that's all for today. Thank you guys for hanging in and supporting the podcast. Love you all. If you're falling asleep, sweet dreams. Otherwise, have a great night, day, whatever time of day it is for you. Have a great one. All right. Love you guys. Take care.